I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding Sequest.
Happy birthday.
Birthday?
Happy birthday, Whiskers.
Oh, yes, because since we last recorded, it has been the anniversary.
Yes, yes. Our program and Sequest DSV both share a birthday. It's like we planned it that way. September 12th. We kind of forgot. I kind of forgot until it happened.
Yeah.
So we are a little ways into the second year of Whiskers.
Hey, hey.
And of course, the 32nd year of Sequest DSV.
It's a good time. Good time. You know what we should talk about?
What should we talk about?
As a birthday present.
Sure. What?
We should talk about how Sequest is getting a ride.
Perhaps. So, a couple days ago, at time of recording, SeaWorld Orlando announced a new suspended dark ride coming in the year 2026 called Sequest : Legends of the Deep.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Sequest.
Uh-huh.
It's in SeaWorld Orlando where they filmed Sequest.
Yeah.
And there is a trailer. There's a trailer that came with this announcement, and the very first image in this trailer.
Hammerhead shark. And then they say something that is a little close to a saying we know.
Great adventure begins with wonder. Beneath the waves lies a world few have ever seen.
They get so close to saying, for beneath the surface lies the future, without saying it. It's beneath the waves. Okay, all right. I see what you're doing.
I absolutely believe
mm-hmm.
there are secret Sequest fans out there that are, like, involved with this, that are just hee-hee-hee. Like, no one will ever know. I'm on to you.
We're going to invite Ted Raimi to cut the ribbon, and no one's going to say why. We're going to be very quiet about that.
The pre-show is going to be a child genius telling you about what you're going to see.
We're going to need a bigger clamshell. So, I don't know where in the park this is going. They haven't announced it. And I've never been to SeaWorld Orlando. I'm not terribly familiar, so I can't, like, give any sort of educated guess.
I have no idea.
About what acreage in the park could be expanded into, like, what is currently, you know, backstage or a parking lot or something that has a current use but could be revived and used. I don't know.
No idea.
But, I mean, more on that as it develops, I suppose. It's being built by Vekoma. I like them. They're good.
Yeah. They do also, the way that they have Sequest spelled out.
Yeah.
The Q is capitalized.
Mm-hmm. That's important. Mm-hmm. That's significant.
It is. We're really desperate over here. we're so desperate for just a glimmer.
Yeah.
Just a sliver of something. Something new in the past 30 years.
Yeah.
I will make it come alive.
Mm-hmm.
I will find the connections.
Anyhow, today is special for its own sake.
Oh.
Because our topic is Season 2, Episode 21, the season finale, Splashdown. This is written by Carlton Eastlake, who, of course, wrote some of our favorite Season 2 episodes, Dead End, the Lava Dragon Rescue,
mm-hmm.
The Sincerest Form of Flattery, AI Bridger.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going to see more of the Carlton Eastlake who wrote Alone, the one with the avatar.
Mm.
The one where Ed Kerr read the script and said, I can't do this anymore, I want out. Directed by Anson Williams, whose previous Sequest efforts are the very previous episode that would air like 3 months later, Blindsided, and Meltdown, Big Crocodile.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't hate this episode like you do.
I do. I think this is the worst of all of Sequest's nearly 60 episodes.
It isn't. It absolutely isn't.
What is then?
This is, like, not one of the best, but it's absolutely not the worst.
This is
like middle ground.
Wow, you must hate this show if this is the middle.
Middle of the bottom? It's not the worst.
What are you putting down at the very bottom then? I'm curious. Not to start with negativity. I'm sorry to wallow in it, but you do have me curious.
C-West.
C-West is not great.
I don't like C-West. I'm bad at knowing the names of the episodes at this point.
Time travel video game time. Is that...
I like that one more than you do as well. That one is not my, like, bottom five. Basically the ones with Wendy, let's be honest. Let's be honest here.
Sure, okay, cool.
Not a big fan of some of those.
Well, she's not in much of this one. In fact, I will say before we even get into it, one of my big problems is hardly any of our cast has anything to do.
No, they get to, like, shoot guns a lot.
This episode is about hearing guest characters dump exposition. Bridger is the most forward, but that's it. And yeah, half of it is just shooting lasers for so long.
Maybe that's why I don't, like, dislike it as much, is because I do get a lot of Bridger and Lucas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, like, and there's moments.
Technically, yes.
Yeah. So, I'm desperate here, okay?
So this begins with the rarest thing on Sequest, a previously on segment.
Yeah.
And it is just the last episode. It's just the last alien episode.
Yeah.
So we got to
talk. Hey, remember when we had aliens and there's that professor who kept, like, fucking his students in his office?
They don't recap that part, but they tell us about comets. They tell us about goo. We are reintroduced to Tobias.
Yeah.
And how at the end we said bye-bye to everyone's favorite, Scott Keller.
Yeah. Do you think he took that rug with him when they left? Or was it too crusty?
I didn't see it. I did not see them carry that rug into that cave. That got left behind.
Hey, they got, like...
That got fumigated.
That spaceship had, that, like, teleportation up into it. Oh, okay. So he was just like, oh, wait, hold on. We got to swing by my old classroom so I can teleport this crusty-ass sex rug into the ship.
Hey, Keller, you got, like, a storage locker or anything you want me to swing by for you? Yeah.
Exactly.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But in the present, we are in C-Deck, of course, where Lucas is holding pictures of unidentified, unclassified fish.
Yes.
To show to Darwin, to get Darwin's name for these fish.
Yes. And the one he holds up is apparently called Moldy Sneeze.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's how the vocoder translates it. And it doesn't really know how to translate it.
Lucas, what did you expect would happen when there isn't a name in English for this fish? What is the program supposed to draw on? I guess it's a moldy sneeze fish, all right.
What if, though, that is really its name? Because the fish has moldy sneezes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has mold inside of it. So when it goes achoo, the mold spores go.
Well, then you translate that into Greek or Latin. We got to class it up.
Well, then you got to teach Darwin Greek or Latin first. And then it can be whatever that would be as moldy sneeze.
Sure.
It'd probably have three times as many letters.
I would hope so. That's what you want out of a scientific name. A lot of syllables.
Yeah. So he, however, moves away from the moon pool and, like, sees Dagwood, like, standing, looking into the distance, and looks over, and he's like, wait, is that who I think it is? Because there is an image, a projection. A
semi-transparent, ghostly image.
Yes.
Of Captain Keller.
Mm-hmm.
He flies a ship. He's a captain now. He's Captain Keller.
There are so many things I could say right now.
Yeah? How many of them are quotes from The Miracle Worker?
All of them.
It's all of them.
All of them.
So he summons them to meet him at the Christmas tree.
Yes. And it's not just them that got this message. Bridger, who's in his room, also got it. The bridge got it. And we find out from Ford, who's, like, radioing Bridger, that, like, everyone on the freaking ship is, like, reporting that also saw him, if they knew him. And what we find out is that the Christmas tree is something that Ford knows what that means.
This is an inside joke he shared with Commander Keller back in season one when they rescued him from the Tonga Trench. That's where they're going.
Yes.
Because there were so many branches off the trench in
this
search.
It's like a Christmas tree.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. I wish they had gone with something that was actually in the episode.
That would have been nice.
It would have been something to reward viewers, the engaged.
Keller also gave a code to Bridger, which was Organa Watt.
Yes, yes. And this is from their academy days when Bridger was trying to sneak a young lady, or perhaps an old lady. Maybe it was Sexy Lexi, I don't know, into his room.
It was definitely young. It's Bridger.
Keller's job was to distract this RA, Organa Watt, by eating her cookies. And apparently she's a poor baker. Poor enough that this is some sort of horrible favor that he's been waiting years. Yes. And the joke is that he would only cash in this favor on like, life or death situation. How bad is her baking? How bad is her conversation? What's wrong with this woman?
Maybe he got really bad food poisoning.
Maybe, yeah, yeah.
Like, she used expired ingredients and then, like, didn't bake it enough.
Okay.
Yeah. There are eggshells inside of them.
Yeah, that's the white. When it says two egg whites, you just you throw out all the yellow and the clear and you just put in the white.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, he's allergic to peanut butter, and, like, she didn't disclose that they were peanut butter cookies. So then he also had an allergic reaction.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. It's really, like, it was life or death for him, which is why this is now a life or death favor.
There you go.
Yeah.
So the codes are cracked, and Henderson immediately is, like, course laid in for the Christmas tree. No one says that. That's what makes it a code, is that no one says that. You weren't even there that year.
No one is supposed to know that but Ford. It's inside joke. What the fuck? So they get there, though, very quickly. It only took a couple seconds. Mm-hmm. And suddenly...
They were in one of those many branches, I guess.
Yes, they were just around the corner from the trench. And an energy beam is coming from up above.
Yeah, this energy beam becomes basically a net made of green lightning.
Yes.
And they get hoisted into a flying saucer.
By the Claw!
The Claw! And you know it's not the aliens that possessed Lucas that one time.
No.
Because their ships are rectangles. This is your classic flying saucer.
This is very much, UFO saucer thing.
But with a lot of, like, lighting effects, and so it's more of like your Close Encounters flying saucer,
But it seriously is like a green energy around a claw, from a claw machine that grabs them. It's goofy. I like it.
So we fade out into commercial and come back in, and yes?
O'Neill remembered he was religious.
He does several times this week.
He crosses himself so much in this episode.
Later in a, I think his final moments, his final on-screen moments, he's going to, like, kiss his teeny tiny Dana Scully cross necklace.
Yeah. I just think it's funny when they go, like, episodes without remembering, and then they're like, no! Good, do it, dude.
So yes, as we come back to the action, Lucas is hypothesizing, quote, "It's a hyperspace jump. It's the only thing that makes sense, Commander."
Yeah.
I
mean, he's not wrong, but...
As they're looking out the window, as they zoom around through the third rock from the sun opening credits.
So they got clawed into... the UFO.
Yes, inside the hollow space of the saucer.
Okay.
Yes.
And O'Neill's like, oh, here, I got a feed.
Mm-hmm.
And they suddenly have footage of the planet that they're being, like, taken to.
Yes.
How? How do we have... Are the whiskers outside the saucer? Are they just, like, floating there?
Transparent aluminum.
I feel... I feel like there's an issue here.
Yeah?
With how they got this video.
My issue is we get at least 3 straight minutes of just the camera shaking and people looking around. That's all that's happening.
Well, they're very concerned.
I guess.
It's very... If a UFO came and clawed you...
Mm-hmm.
And then made you hyper jump...
Mm-hmm.
And you saw a planet...
It's the only thing that makes sense, Commander.
...rushing towards you that you've never seen before. I think you'd be looking around pretty, like, concerned.
Yeah, and I think they could communicate that with half of the amount of time they spend on it, or less.
Eh. I give them a pass on that
one. It's television. You are in command of the control of time and space.
Eh.
Anyhow, the claw sets them down in an ocean. Ah. And as they're finally wet again, they dive. And they pass by a very non-hydrodynamic sub that starts moving to dock with them. This is the chunkiest bit of, like, it looks like it is made of Jenga blocks arranged around a drum.
Yeah.
This is not a smooth submarine.
No, I don't know why it's shaped like that. It's a little weird.
Would you describe it as kind of a kludge?
I was gonna say, it looks like something someone would build in Minecraft. From the little I know about Minecraft.
Sure.
It's blocks.
It's blocks.
It's very blocky.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It's very pixelated. According to my notes, it's dicking. I don't know what I was trying to write.
Docking? You were trying to say docking.
But it says it's dicking. You know, do what you want to do, ship,
mm-hmm,
I guess.
Mm-hmm. Which is docking.
Yeah. So they all rush to the launch bay. And you know who comes out of this ship? We got Obi-Wan Kenobi. No, we don't. What
is that? Mark Hamill comes out of the ship.
My brain was thinking of Ewan McGregor for some reason.
What was he up to in 1996? This is pre-Trainspotting. You know, I think that you could have got him if he was in Florida at the time.
That's who I was thinking of, though, in my brain, which is why I said it. Like, I just saw him. You know why?
Why?
Because it's the freaking robes that Tobias wears.
Yeah.
Because that's who we're seeing. We're seeing Tobias.
If you're going to put Mark Hamill in your space show, now that you're doing interplanetary travel, you're going to put him in these brown mystic robes. And he's going to walk around doing this weird wizard hands thing.
Yes.
I hate the wizard hands.
It looks like burlap that he's wearing.
It does. It does.
But I think he looked... Like, I don't know, it just screams like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It does. It absolutely does.
Not
the guy from the Guyver.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they take very little time to notice that he's not blind anymore. They bring that up and he has no explanation for it. No,
he does. He says,
is it a sufficient explanation?
He says, well, I no longer have to pretend to be mostly human. I think before you were pretending to be completely human, so... But he was fake blind before.
That's not how they explained it in that episode. He was real blind.
Well, apparently, now he's not. It was all ruse. He was fake blind. So now he can see.
Sure, okay.
That's what they're going with, and everyone's like, okay!
Sure, okay.
Are you going to question the not blind guy about his not blindness?
If I want to extend an olive branch to this episode, maybe this is the first clue that something is amiss.
Things
aren't all up. But in the end, we will see that Tobias LeConte is indeed not blind with no sufficient explanation even so.
He doesn't have to pretend to be human.
That's insufficient. That doesn't mean anything. He says it like it means something.
Okay,
Mark Hamill.
Later. They do not explain it. So maybe, mm-hmm. Maybe there's just technology on this planet.
They talk so much about how no, there's not. The technology here sucks. We're about to get
for most things. But do you see anyone wearing glasses? No, you don't.
They have super LASIK.
They have really good LASIK.
thing you have to understand, if you're
they have contacts that, like, make you not blind.
If you're not watching along with us for this week, that's a blessing. But I do need you to understand that Mark Hamill is delivering every line with the greatest weight and import. He is, like...
I feel like they are paying...
He's fully wizard mode the whole time.
They are not just paying him by word, but by the weight of the word.
Mm-hmm.
And he is going to make bank.
Everything is in this dreadful whisper that, oh, wow, that you say it like it means something so hard.
What happened to the dude that was just, like, fucking his students left and right?
At least he had a personality. I didn't like it much, but it was there.
So, yeah, Tobias comes out as Mr. Wizard, and they're like, oh, hey, nice to see you. Where's Scott? And he's like, oh, I thought you got his message. And they're like, kinda, but he didn't really tell us shit.
His message that we thought would mean we would find him here. Where is he?
I don't even remember what they fucking said during that point. Did they even say anything about where he was?
No,
they say
no, because
stuff about it later.
We have to move on to the exposition meeting.
Yes.
Because Tobias has brought friends with bumpy foreheads.
Big foreheads.
Big bumpy foreheads.
Receding hairlines.
What if Klingons were elves?
Yes.
What if Klingons were elves?
What if they were very pasty?
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
And this pair of these similar alien mystics have joined Tobias the Wizard in the wardroom with all of our top-level Sequest staff. As, yeah, it's just so much exposition on so many fronts. Oh my god.
They explain that when Tobias and Scott, like, went off to space, Tobias wanted to go, like, explore the world or, like, the universe. And,
yeah, go all over the
space.
Place.
And Scott was like, no, I want to go see your planet. So they came back.
Well, he had a thought that if his planet was sending assassins to Earth to hunt him down, maybe there was something really worth seeing back on... Back on Hyperion. This planet has a name now, Hyperion.
It had a name before.
Congratulations, it had a name before.
It did. It was Hyperion. So they came back, found that things went bad.
Mm-hmm. But things went bad because things were starting to go so good. It's not that Tobias LeConte, or the alien that animates him, was this one lone renegade for peace. There's a whole movement, an uprising, a resistance.
Yes.
That was then getting squashed, and that's why things are going real bad.
So the Kratox, which is the
force in power.
Yes. Flooded the planet by... lots of explosions and melting the ice caps.
They kept using their tractor beam technology to throw comets at the planet.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the comets are big, dirty snowballs. They melt and turn this desert world into an ocean planet, almost entirely covered in water.
Yes.
Especially once, yeah, the ice caps melt.
And they're also explaining a lot about their technology.
Uh-huh. And how it sucks.
It sucks. And they're only like 40 years ahead of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they, the Resistance, need Sequest help. And Sequest's like, how can we help? You are crazy, awesome aliens who are doing interplanetary travel all the time.
And they're like, that's really all we got. Like, that and the great eye care. But everything else... really sucks.
We can send guys by goo, but that's basically it. Like, your guns are way better. Your sub is way... You're basically the only good sub on this whole planet because we didn't have oceans until, like, 3 months ago.
Did you see that fucking Minecraft thing? It sucks.
So don't worry about it. You're actually, like, the 800-pound gorilla. It's fine. It's fine. You rule, actually.
So they're like... You know, you gotta help us.
You gotta defend us.
You gotta
help us.
Who is better to do undersea war than the Sequest?
Mm-hmm. And Bridger's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if this is our fight. And Tobias says, well, it will be. Because once the Kratax are done with squashing the resistance, they're going to conquer Earth.
Why?
Because Earth is next. They found the way to Earth, and their thing is they're conquerors. They're insatiable. They love to hit people with pointy sticks and stuff.
There's got to be people closer. I'm just going to say.
It's just one comet goo ride away.
So they're like, okay, fine. But, like, where's Scott? You never answered that question. And they're like, oh, yeah, he was taken hostage.
And I want to see that. I want to see Scott Keller leading an assault team with an AK-47. I don't want to hear Mark Hamill whisper about it while Bridger just looks pained. Mmm. Oh, my buddy.
I'm so mad at this.
They just talk about things. They just talk about functional things. They don't talk about interesting things. They don't do interesting things, because when they do things, it's just laser, 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 laser.
You think I get mad? Like, goodness. Mr. Grumpy Pants over here. You got the pout pout fish.
I am not the pout pout fish. I'm the moldy sneeze fish. Thank you very much.
The moldy sneeze fish with his grumpy wumpies all over the place. Full of mold.
Yeah.
I was going to say full of mud. Yeah, you can have mud. You're a muddy, moldy, sneezy fish that's got grumpy wumpies.
Is that supposed to make me feel better? Just calling me names?
Hey, you're the one that's like saying you're the pout pout fish. You agreed. So we're going for it now.
Sure, okay.
Mm-hmm. So after they get all this news, the main crew needs to have a meeting. And, you know, we find out that Wendy, like, can't read anything off of them. She's just getting static.
Because, you know, they're aliens. Their brains are different.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
She can, like, read Darwin sometimes, so that's a little confusing, but sure. Well,
she's met him. They hang out a lot.
And O'Neill is tasked with trying to, like, hack into all the communications of the planet,
mm-hmm.
see what they can find out.
We never hear about that again.
No.
Well, when we hear about it again, it's Lucas reporting in, and not O'Neill.
And Darwin's restricted to the boat, which, yes. Like, obviously, you are on an alien planet. You're pretty lucky that Darwin was on the boat when you got abducted.
Yeah, I'd be worried about, like, alien bacteria in the ocean. Like, what's this algae gonna do to our dolphin? I don't know.
And Mama Dolphin ain't there to come save him.
Yeah. This is not a concern. We don't care about that. We don't think about that.
It'd be funny if they, like, started to go and they left Darwin behind and he was like, no, you're gonna turn this thing around. I need to get my dolphin. I don't go anywhere without him.
You mean Bridger?
Yeah.
Okay. So people have, like, their first tasks, and Bridger goes to his room where he begins watching his old home movies with him and his good friend Scott.
Which kind of look like just the security footage.
It kind of looks like just recycled footage from the earlier guest spots, which is fine. That's the economical way to do it. Makes sense.
It's just always weird when you recognize the scene and you're like, no one was there with the video camera.
It does kind of seem like he's just, like, assembled some spy footage
as
of
I said,
his buddy.
Security footage.
It's a little weird. Did he know he was on camera? I don't know. There's a consent issue.
I mean, you are on a giant submarine.
Sure.
I would not be surprised if there weren't security cameras everywhere.
I would expect everything to be pointed outside. But, you know, I guess the UEO is a little paranoid.
After Krieg, you gotta know who's doing what.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So while he's reflecting on whether to join this war or not, whether to save his friend or not, like, what do you do? Like, this is not in the manual. What's up? His good friend and counselor, Dr. Wendy Smith, comes mm-hmm. in.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, you're worried about him. Like, no shit! They have a little chat because, you know, she never met him before. So she's like, oh, they tell me you know him from your academy days.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get little, you know, yeah. And he decided to go to space and I decided to go to the ocean. And, like, we didn't see eye to eye, but we stayed friends.
this is the first time we've heard the Keller started in submarines before going to the space program. And I call bullshit on that. Like, mm-hmm. that kind of, like, ruins their relationship a little bit.
I feel like before they talked about being, like, professional.
Yeah,
they met each other, like, more professionally.
Mm-hmm. And that Scott was always the spaceman. Specifically, the like, interplanetary spaceman. But what is plausible and exists is going to Mars and finding weird snails. But he wants that to be the first step on a long, long road that he eventually did walk.
Was it
in much less plausible ways?
A multi-military academy.
Oh, you think he was like Air Force?
Yeah. Sure? What if it was, they had different branches at the same academy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the future of the past, but you know, they could have a different like academy structure than we're used to.
Yeah, all right. But I still don't believe he was ever in submarines.
He was undeclared. He hadn't declared his major yet.
Submarines is a major?
He was like, am I Air Force or am I Coast Guard?
But this scene, I think, is the best the episode gets. I like Bridger's quiet moment of indecision. I like that he shares it with Dr. Smith, who is like, if not him, I would accept Ford, but like no one else would get to see like this side of Bridger in this moment.
Darwin.
You know, yeah, he could be having this chat at the moon pool.
Yeah.
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 That would actually be really cute.
Yeah, and then Darwin can make some sassy comment about like, why would anyone want to go to fucking space? Ocean's the best. You can catch fish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then he could also end it the same way by like giving a little bop on the chin. Did you like that move? Giving Wendy a little bop on the chin?
No.
No?
No. No. So that's a little too like, hey, I dated your mom, sexy pants Lexi or whatever. There you go, kid.
Mm-hmm.
No, don't do that.
I might be your dad. Let's go hook up. No, we already determined he was her babysitter when she was 7.
Yeah.
That's way better.
So much better. It's totally fine. So Ford radios and is like, hey, I think we're under attack.
Which is an insane thing to say, by the way. I think we're under attack. Come on. Come on. Say what is actually happening. Say what you know. What is this?
So they rush to the bridge, and there is another a sub, some mm-hmm. type of warship. And Tobias comes running in, too, and he's like, ah, oh, that's a Kaidan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's the best underseas weapon the Kratax have.
And so as they approach... it is time for Bridger to finally make a decision. They're like, his hand is being forced. Are you going to shoot or not? And he decides, yes, they are joining this war on the side of the liberation. They're going to rescue his best friend in the world. And that means they're going to kick this submarine's ass.
Blow it up.
They blow it up real good. It's not even close. They are officially in this war.
Yep. So then they get a signal.
Ah.
And it is from some other Kratax
mm-hmm.
who are like, well.
And this is the familiar, I guess, sort of familiar alien from, you know, when we met Tobias, yeah. right? The big green guy, big teeth, short and very muscly.
Yeah.
Yeah, those
guys. Little goblin dudes.
But they have clothes now.
So they were running around naked before.
They were running around naked by choice before. They were just a bunch of freaks.
They were doing naked wrestling.
On the roof, in public.
Well, no one on Earth knew. So they were like, we can be free here. Only one of us is making it back. So, like, who needs to know that, like, I murdered you with my nudity hanging out?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's fine.
It's fine.
The
sex organs are actually that weird hair. You know, that's how they work.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. We just kind of like dangle it at each other.
It's like flowers. You just sort of dust each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of hair flip. Hair mm-hmm, flip. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're pregnant now. Was it as good for you as it was for me? Hair flip. Like, oh, it's kind of itchy.
The end.
It got in my mouth.
That's where I was aiming. This hostage video. That's what it is. It's a hostage video. This Kratak has appeared to reveal Scott Keller tied to a chair. Oh my god.
And they're like, hey, we're gonna kill him.
And they do.
And they do. They vaporize him. He's gone.
They shoot him with a gun, and in three frames of television footage, he's gone.
Yep.
Nothing left.
And Tobias is like, I really thought they wouldn't kill him if you were here. Why would you think that?
Why would you think that? Why in the world would you think that? So yeah, the one thing besides some cockamamie story that brought Bridger into this war is now off the table. He cannot save his friend, but he's trapped in this situation anyway. So he decides to get on his launch and go meet the Resistance War Council. Ah, end of the act.
Yeah. And so he and Tobias and Wendy and Brody and Lucas all head off. And they go to the, like, underwater UFO.
Yep.
It's what the colony is, but it looks like just an underwater UFO.
And would you believe that this meeting is also just a bunch of exposition about these aliens and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. We learn about their biologically determined lives, how the other side, the Kratax, all that's left are the Stormers, these muscle goblins, and they are incapable of doing anything but killing, so the Resistance's back is up against the wall. There's no, like, surrender just means slaughter. There is no chance of a peace agreement.
Yes. And there's only 500, like, 1,000 of them left.
Out of billions.
4 billion. And so, like, this is their last, like, colony, and they're like, obviously, you need to help us, because, oh, look, a child. Baby Brittany Snow.
This is Brittany Snow, back in from being Dagwood's gas station friend, and now in the Klingon elf makeup.
Yes.
Child-sized version.
And so she presents Wendy with a picture. They have crayons. Aliens have crayons.
Well, there you go. It's not like a weird light hologram. They aren't that advanced. They just have crayons.
She's speaking an alien language, so, like, the other lady has to translate. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh yes, this picture she drew for you is her favorite oasis from before the planet was flooded.
Mm-hmm.
And Brody is just like, oh my god, I want children. apparently his ovaries are exploding because he's like,
all that pollen is in the air. Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah.
The hair flips. So he tells this child, like, you know, the water's not that deep. Maybe when this is all over, we can, like, make you more land. Hang in there, kiddo.
We're going to dredge up some islands. You know what that means?
I read about
trenches.
Chicago once. They move their shoreline out. We can do something like that.
Sure, why not?
Might have to have a fire first, but, like, we'll figure it out.
So the situation is the Resistance is holed up on the surface here in their final colony and its tunnels going beneath the new sea floor.
Mm-hmm.
While the Kratax hold all of the space stations in orbit. Because the space stations were military and the Kratax controlled military, yada, yada, yada. And their great weapon is one last comet that they're using their incredible tractor beams to aim at this undersea base full of the Resistance.
Yeah.
We learned this from Mithor, the man of the Resistance aliens.
Yeah.
He is played by Tom Nowicki, who trained at the Ensemble Studio Theater in New York. He appeared in everything filmed in Central Florida and was a heel in the Dixie Wrestling Alliance.
I have never heard of that.
It's back in the Federation days. He later starred as the hated league commissioner in Roller Jam.
Oh.
A real roller derby league, but packaged with, like, pro wrestling style staged storylines that filmed at Universal Orlando for TNN.
Mm.
Perhaps in the very same stages that were sequenced.
It might be.
Just a few years later. Roller Jam.
I feel like I vaguely remember this. So they're like, here's what we're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because they got this comment they're going to throw at us. Very Marco and Ars. Like, we're going to
absolutely, yeah.
Okay. What if we use our tractor beam, the one piece of technology we have, mm-hmm. on our really cool-ass ship, and stop it?
Yeah, yeah. And all you have to do as the Sequest is to fight all of their not-cool-at-all stupid subs to like, protect our back.
I feel like they could have done this without the Sequest. Like, I get it, but also, yeah. Like, I feel like you could have just done this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Bridger's like, okay, what are you going to do with the comet? Just have it hit the other side of the planet? And Tobias says, Bridger, there is no other side. We're going to tear that comet to pieces and turn it into a meteor shower to like, rip all these space stations apart. We're going to kill them all.
Going to fuck them up, Bridger.
Yeah. And so... no one in this episode, and here's a real missed opportunity, no one in this episode talks about Bridger's son dying in combat.
No.
No one brings up or mentions Bridger's pledge to abandon war.
No.
This could have been the crux of that Wendy scene with the Keller Home movies. Yes. It's not. It's nope. Completely absent.
Yeah.
Why?
Also, no one, like, brings up the fact, like, hey, this is basically, like, genocide. You want to, like, kill everyone.
Yeah, when but they they're not real people anymore. The only ones left are the ones that are genetically incapable of anything but murder. They're not really human. They're not, or, you know, human equivalent.
Just saying. There's some...
It's messed up from every angle.
They all go back to the Sequest. We don't hear anyone's opinions about this plan. Dagwood takes Tobias to his quarters, and they decide to have a little, like, team meeting right around the launch. Mm-hmm. Like, the launch hole.
Yes.
And Bridger's like, okay, guys, like, how's everyone feeling? What's everyone think?
And,
Brody is like, let's fuck them off!
Yeah, let's go!
It's very straightforward!
Wolverines, yeah!
And Lucas is like, I don't know, things seem weird.
Yeah.
I got a vibe.
He's getting a vibe. They've not gotten any information from any of their own sources to verify anything that they're being told by Tobias and the Bumpy Head crew.
Yeah.
But, you know, Brody, he got a drawing from a child, so he's ready to kill so many people.
Yeah.
And Lucas has... just a bad feeling about this. And this is the first time he uses the word kludge.
Kludge.
Isn't the word kludge? Like the English pronunciation is just kludge. Why do they always say kludge?
Kludge. Because it's more fun to say.
And every time kludge. They say kludge, it is clearly ADR'd from a different word. Yeah. Every single time.
Kludge. It's more fun than kludge. Kludge. So, Bridger's like, hey, Tony, Darwin, go take a swim.
Yeah.
Go out into this alien water that we have not done any science on.
And check out that submarine we shot down. See what you can find. Maybe they have a communications device where we can, you know, learn something and outside of these darn meetings.
Yeah. So they head out and, you know, swim around to get over there.
There's a lot of good, there's a lot of fun, like, they actually put a diver in a suit in the ocean with a camera, mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
And some almost as fun animated Darwin swimming around.
Yeah, he got his little air pack.
He's got his air pack. It's super cute. We love the air pack.
It's very cute. And so they get to the ship and they're looking around and we go back to the bridge as they're doing that.
Because they've disappeared off radar and everything.
Yes. And they're like, oh man, where are they? And they're like, wait, it's showing that they're coming in through the aqua tubes. And so, like, Bridger rushes down there to, like, where they're headed. And Tony's there. And he's like, you're not going to believe who we found.
Great, Scott. I mean, great. It's Scott.
Darwin carried him in.
They're always rescuing this very wet man.
Yeah.
The wetter he is, the more he needs Sequest to find him.
He kind of has issues with that. So yeah, it's Scott. He's not dead.
He's not dead, but
he was in a suit.
They almost killed him.
Yes.
They almost shot him dead.
And so they get his helmet off, and he's alive, and he's awake, and he's like, hey, if you haven't figured it the fuck out, you're fighting for the wrong side.
Bum, bum, bum. There's our mini cliffhanger as we go to commercial. And we come back, and all of the relevant people are crowding around him as he is in a bed in the med bay.
Yes.
And we find out that everything we were ever told is true, except for the identity of who is telling it.
Yeah.
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 The comet stuff, real. The way the planet got wrecked, the history of this war, all true. You were just having the Kratex tell you about it, and they were calling themselves the Resistance. There was very little lying, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're the ones doing it.
But in this scene, his description of the Kratex explains why their tech is garbage, but they can do interstellar stuff all the same. Mm-hmm. And it's that they are looters, the military, like, conquistador leadership of this planet is just killing all their scientists all the time.
And stealing shit and from other planets.
Stealing shit from other planets. Yeah, that big claw grabber UFO that got sequestered in the first place. That's not theirs. They didn't build that. They sent a goo man into it. It killed everybody and stole it the same way it almost did with Sequest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Lucas is just there like, I knew it!
I knew it!
I was right! I had a kludge!
A clue to the kludge.
And so the only colony is actually on the other side of the planet.
Yes.
And Tobias is absolutely... not Tobias.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tobias is actually also, like, a hostage, and the Tobias here is a fake.
Yes.
And the comet is absolutely coming.
That is still real.
That is still very real and still very much a problem.
And they're going to throw it at that lost colony that is on the other side of the planet they haven't visited.
So they decide to do, like, a big ruse. To get Tobias to come to them for, I guess, like, they're going to have dinner in the wardroom. And so he walks in, and he's like, oh, Ford, yes, I'm so excited to eat these bananas on this table.
Bananas?
then everyone rushes in with their guns. Scott leads the way, like, hey.
And he has his action jumpsuit.
Mm-hmm.
He finally got the Sequest gear.
And so he's like, who are you? I know you're not the real one. Who? He names off some names.
Yeah, he's been fighting this war so much he knows individual intelligence officers that are the most likely candidates to be fake Tobias right now.
Fake Tobias
mm-hmm.
shifts and into...
with an F.
Did it sound like I didn't say shifts?
I'm just making sure, you know, if someone, like a car goes by or something. Yeah. Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, you know. I forget, does he have hair?
I don't know. I think he's bald.
Is he a bald one?
I think he's a bald one.
So he can't just like, whoosh.
Yeah, he can't Vidal Sassoon them.
Yeah. Scott just like shoots him.
And yeah, he gets shot 1,000 times.
So he passes out. so does
everyone else. Everyone is in their cool guy action gear. Like
Ortiz,
you see,
has his guns out.
You see Tony Piccolo just like in the corner with no sleeves.
Yes, he also has joined the no sleeve club.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be more people involved in all the action going mm-hmm. forward. They can now have 3 people without sleeves.
Mm-hmm,
the
mm-hmm.
ratio
and there
is okay.
are so many people. They just like round up several fire teams.
Yes.
And there are this is the largest population of Brody boys we've ever seen. And they're all just hup two threeing all through the hallways to get onto their assault craft.
Yes, because they're going to go over there and they're going to rescue Tobias and they're going to blow up that ship, so that way the comet can't be thrown into the planet.
Yes.
So Bridger, though, before they go, gives Ford the arming key and is like, blow shit up and don't let them have anything if you need to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because he is going on this attack mission Why?
I don't know. Why is Wendy going?
Well, she has one very important task.
What's that?
Well, when they get to when they find him, she uses her psychic abilities to verify he is the real guy and not a second fake.
I guess there's that.
There is that. I don't.
They could have just asked him about like the sex rug. The alien's not going to know about the sex rug.
I don't know. They've been scanning his memories, so he fits in. The alien knows too much about the sex rug.
He keeps those really like blocked.
The alien wishes he didn't know about the sex rug. Maybe aliens are cool with sex rugs, because that's just like the towel they use when they get out of the shower.
Is it a sex rug?
I mean, with how they do it, yeah.
Oh, because the hair.
Because the hair pollen. Yeah, okay.
I was like...
We have a deep lore here.
I'm trying to remember all the details. I'm sorry.
Okay. So, another cool thing in this episode is the assault shuttles they launch have laser docks.
Oh my god, it's the coolest thing.
I like a laser dock. This is cool. Describe the laser dock.
The laser dock is like a Tron ring.
Or... a ring that lights up.
A Tron ring on front of the shuttle, and then it shoots out
a cylinder of laser,
and like lasers wherever you want to dock, and then you suction cup in, and
mm-hmm.
it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking love it.
And so begins the part of the episode where we just shoot our way through a lot of hallways and smoke machines.
Yeah.
They do that for a while.
Yes. And they eventually blow a door, and Tobias is inside, and Wendy does her whole, like, I'm gonna scan your brain and just think, and says some stupid-ass line where she has to say human again, but she can't pronounce the H. So it's human. Just think about when you're human.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Fucking hate that shit. Like, what the hell? Why did no one say, you pronounce it? Did you know you pronounce this, Rosalind?
Well, there's a dialect shift in the future of
the
sequence.
Human.
Yeah, yeah.
No one else does that.
Well, it's just what part of Florida she's from.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. It's
a panhandle dialect. Yeah, yeah.
Panhandle.
Thank you for correcting me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, they have Tobias LeConte, the real Tobias LeConte, and he said...
Well, kinda.
That's true. The alien who lived the last couple decades is Tobias LeConte, which is actually the name of a dead toddler.
Yeah. So, kinda.
Kinda. And his advice for how to save the day is... Again, said with the most grave import a legendary actor in the field can muster, blow up the plasma core.
And so they're like, okay.
Well, they take a vote. Because, maybe this is a mission we don't make it all back from. And Brody says, what? We're voting in the Navy? And Bridger says, you're not in the Navy anymore, son.
Well, I mean, if they do blow this up, they can't go home.
Right.
Because
right.
It is, like, brought them there.
It's the craft that carried them across massive reaches of interstellar space.
They will now live on this planet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the vote is unanimously yes. Everyone wants to blow up this plasma core.
So they all go running out, different directions.
Mm-hmm.
Bridger takes a crew to the room to put all the charges around the plasma.
The plasma core.
Yeah.
That is basically baby's first warp core.
Yeah.
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 Would you believe it's a big, shimmery, vertical cylinder?
I would.
With kind of like a bumper area around the base. Yeah.
Yeah. The other crew... goes running off in another direction.
Mm-hmm. To secure the exit.
Yes.
Yeah.
And some crews run into each other more, too. But then, the Kraytaks arrive, so we're in, big shooty times.
And I do love to see Ortiz's hair bounce as he gallops through the hallways.
Such bouncy hair.
He's got the bounciest hair.
His curls are lovely. the Kraytaks throw a bomb into the launch hole.
Yeah, they
and
do.
Blow up their ship. So they can't leave.
This is after
Like, they've been cornered for, like, 5 minutes.
At least 5 minutes of just shooting in hallways, more shooting. Eventually, the leader types come out with their own wrist guns. There's a close-up insert shot of Brody doing an action slide on both knees.
It's a lot of shooty time. We could have had less.
It's so much. But yeah, the fireball when they blow up their escape route looks really nice. It's a lot of fire.
Yeah. And so Bridger radios Ford and is like, so we're cut off. Mm-hmm. And Ford's instantly like, we're coming to save your asses. And he's like, nope, absolutely not. You gotta stop this mothership. You gotta, don't let this get away. Mm-hmm. And so Ford's like, okay, got it. Two birds with one stone. I'm going to blow us both up.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's the deal.
Ford's got a plan.
Darwin, you're going to leave.
You're going to follow the stinger.
You're going to follow Lucas. And Lucas is like, what do you mean he's going to follow me? He's like, you are going to go on the stinger and you're going to leave. You're going to go as far away as possible. And he's like, absolutely not. And he's like, absolutely yes. Dagwood, tag, you're in. And Dagwood's like, sorry, Lucas, but they already talked to me, and, like, I was told to escort you out of here if Ford says so. So, like, we're going. So, and Lucas looks so betrayed.
Lucas becomes Dagwood's luggage. That he's Dagwood's carry-on as he goes to the stinger.
I always like this moment.
Sure.
Like, Sequest is Lucas's home.
Mm-hmm.
These people are his family, and he's being sent off to go, like, we're all gonna die, but you go, because you're the child.
Yes, one last time.
One last time.
We all protect the child.
We all protect the child, but he's so betrayed. Betrayed!
He's not the child anymore.
No!
The deal changed, why are you going back to the old deal?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's that... You see it a couple times throughout the season where they're still like, but no, you're still the child, and we're still going to protect you.
Mm-hmm. I think of the fact that this was written with the idea that it would be the last episode, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, it is clear in how it actually ends, but, that is confirmed by, you know, the writers and producers. And I think about the characters who have nothing to do and how much that sucks for them. Henderson has one moment, and it's starting to cry when she realizes what it means that there's no shuttle. That's it. That's her one bit of focus in the whole 44 minutes.
That's okay.
I think it's not. I think it's not okay.
Here's the thing. My fondness for Henderson comes in the next season.
Sure, sure. That's true.
I don't have it in this one. Mm-hmm. I don't care that she doesn't get a scene in this one.
But Ortiz also has nothing really going on this week. O'Neill has a little cross-touching and nothing going on. Like,
they have about the same.
Ortiz just has bouncy hair. That's not a moment. That's nothing. He did that himself. The show did not help him do that.
Well, he did a good job. Just gonna say. It's styled very nicely.
And Dagwood's moment isn't really Dagwood's moment. It's Dagwood joining in the team plan to get Lucas out of here.
Well, he's a member of the team.
He is a member of the team.
It's all he wants.
That's true.
If this would have been the end, is it unfortunate that everyone wouldn't get a scene? Yes. My problems with this is more just like everything take... Like, when we get to the shooty time, the shooty time is just too fucking long.
Yes.
With nothing happening.
Yes.
But... I still don't have the hatred you have for this. It's fine.
It's really not.
It's just there. And I think for me, it's because it's the passage to get to season three. It's like, it's fine. I know what's to come. It's okay.
Okay, but as 45 minutes of television, it is not fine. It is deficient.
There is worse.
It is poorly laid out, poorly structured, poorly characterized.
We can argue about this forever.
The plot only works because they spend so much time in exposition meetings forcing it to work. Like, I don't care about the biological caste system of your aliens that don't matter and are boring.
I don't know what else to say because you're just going to argue against me, so I don't know.
I'm just trying to get a full explanation on the record. So anyway, yeah, they're still just shooting at each other in the hallways.
Brody gets shot.
He gets one in the gut. That's no good. Don't
they,
like that.
They move a panel and go to a different hallway. Mm-hmm. And there's more shooting.
Yep.
The Sequest, though, is like, okay, let's go. We're gonna go to, like, blow ourselves up next to this. Mm-hmm. So we blow them up, too. But then there is a mine that comes out of nowhere and gets, like, fucking, like, catapulted at them and just blows, like, a fucking hole through the hall.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty fucking cool.
It's pretty cool. If you imagine the Sequest is a body, right? This mine goes through the chin and out the back of the skull.
It's the type of, like, really good catapult stuff from, like, Lord of the Rings in my mind. Mm-hmm. Where it's just like, oh god, there's no coming back from that. And you just instantly know. Because you get a moment right before it happens where they see it.
Yes.
Where they do this close-up of, like, Ford's face.
Mm-hmm.
Of his reaction to it. And you just know, like, before the action even happens, that they are fucked and they are all going to die from this.
Which
and
is when the tiny cross comes out because O'Neill is also there.
And then when it goes through, like, you don't get any more reactions of anyone. Like,
yep.
They're just all dead.
There's
that is it.
No more scenes inside the Sequest.
And I do think that is such, like, that is done so well.
Yeah.
That is done so well. And so what do you get is you get Bridger trying to radio the Sequest and them not answering, but he gets through to Lucas in the Stinger, who Lucas is the one who has to deliver the news
that their Sequest is hulled. Yeah.
They're down. They're all gone.
And so Bridger knows that he's not long to follow, and he gives Lucas one last bit of wisdom. Bridger's last message to Lucas Walenchek is one of integrity. He's supposed to go find some land somewhere, survive, and quote, just don't let them take away what you believe. That's it. That is his charge.
And tell them what happened here.
Oh,
his line though of like, we've had it, kiddo.
Yep.
Oof.
And so there's nothing left to do than for everyone who's barely holding on behind this cover to all hold hands as Bridger pushes the detonator button. And this sunken UFO blows up into so many pieces.
Yes.
Everyone is so, so dead.
Yes.
This is the least survivable thing I've ever seen in my life.
And so then we go to Lucas and Dagwood, who are in a life raft, because the Stinger has apparently run out of fuel.
Floating around beneath alien moons.
In just a expansive ocean where they haven't yet found that land that Ford said was close by.
B-roll Dolphin is also here.
Doing some leaps. Darwin's having a great time.
Darwin is played by an actual dolphin for once.
And so Lucas is talking about what their plan is. You know, they're going to find fuel. They're going to find that land. They'll go look for survivors.
And he makes a final solemn vow. We'll carry their story back to Earth. And as soon as he says that, a bit of the first season Sequest theme kicks in to transition into the closing theme. Aw. What a way to end a show that didn't end yet.
What if it would have just ended right there?
And as we fade out,
I feel like, yeah? I will say, did Farscape?
No. The answer is no.
They had their own boat scene.
And it was way better than this.
Yes. But was he like, you know, we should just like, there's this, if you put some people in a boat with water and then you do something really tragic, it works pretty well. Maybe we should try that again.
So as it fades out, there is a title card in memory of Carl Schwartz. Schwartz was music editor for season 2, as well as things like Hellraiser 3, Hot Dog the Movie, Children of the Corn 3, and 2 seasons of the Beauty and the Beast show. But he did pass away shortly before this episode's airing.
But then we have to end with a fish fact.
Yes.
And Ted Raimi is there to tell us about otters.
It's Teddy's turn. He's telling us about sea otters and various facts about sea otters, like how they spend up to 50% of their day grooming themselves. And he makes a little crack. Ah, just like actors. Ha 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 ha.
He didn't talk about their armpit pockets. He
did not talk about their armpit pockets.
Or that they have favorite rocks. Or that they, like, can unscrew shit and, like, if they're, you know, in a habitat, they have to, like, build them differently so they don't have access to the screws because they'll just take apart their habitat. I know more otter facts than Ted Raimi.
He had about 15 seconds.
Yeah, I can talk fast. I can get them all out.
He had to squeeze in that thing about how actors are conceited, you know? It's important.
Armpit pockets! They juggle rocks!
They tie themselves up in kelp when they sleep so they don't drift away.
Yes! They hold hands so they don't drift away!
So yeah, there is the ending where the entire cast but three, one of whom is not human, two are not human if you ask a racist, are all dead.
Yep.
So yeah, there you go. Written in the belief that there was no season three. Everyone seems to be lost forever. And Brody in particular gets that gut shot because, again, Ed Kerr had been requesting to leave the show since he refused to be in the episode alone.
I like that they, like, double killed him.
They double killed him. They shot him dead and then they exploded him and then they drowned him. Is he Rasputin?
They're like, fine, you want out? We're going to kill you so many times.
You're going to go all the way out, Ed. Yeah. That's basically how it went.
Yeah. So, darling, do you have a fish fact?
I got a fish fact. I got a fish fact right here for you. My fish fact is about a secret fish that has not yet been identified by science.
Is it the moldy sneeze?
That's right. A moldy sneeze sounds to me like an allergic response to mold. So let's talk about mold allergies.
Okay.
Allergies, of course, are an immune reaction to something that isn't generally harmful, but the sufferer's immune system sure thinks it is. So, in this case, the immune system would begin producing immunoglobulin E, an antibody that begins this process to release histamine, a signal chemical that in larger amounts creates allergy symptoms, your itchiness, your sneeziness, your swellingness, watery eyes, all that sort of thing. Between 3 and 10% of people have a mold allergy, and those who also have asthma may have an asthma attack triggered by mold exposure.
This makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Dallin, have you got a fish fact?
I do. So, starfish.
Starfish. Because we're in space and stars, starfish?
Yes.
Okay.
Their fossils have dated back 450 million years.
Wow.
There's not a lot of fossils of them from back when because, like, they tend to just, like, disintegrate.
Right.
But there are some. Most have five arms. Some have seven. Uh-huh. Some have 10.
Whoa.
Some have 15.
Whoa.
There is one that has over 50 arms.
That's too many arms. Are you sure it's not a couple of them stuck together?
I am sure.
Okay.
They also don't have blood. Instead, they have a water vascular system.
I want to leave.
Seawater is pumped through their bodies for nutrients.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I also saw a really cool picture that was, because some of them, you know, like, they can grow limbs back, and some of them will actually, like, chop off one of their limbs, and then they can grow a whole nother, like, sea star from that limb.
I read that Animorphs book. I know what's up.
There was a really cool picture of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't like it.
I wouldn't.
But, in the news of sea stars.
In the news.
Since
they're making news these days.
Since 2013, 5 billion sea stars have died from a mysterious ailment.
Oh, that's terrible.
Just within the past couple weeks, scientists have discovered what bacteria is causing those deaths.
Amazing.
And they don't yet have, like, a solution, but this is a huge breakthrough because now they can actually start to, like, investigate and try to figure out how they can intervene to stop the sea stars massively dying.
Is it perhaps a special kind of kelp that the sea star's mommy can tell you about?
Maybe.
Okay.
But there you go. That literally, like, just hit the news a couple weeks ago.
Wow. Nice. Yeah. Cutting edge.
And it's been, you know. We got
the pulse of the ocean.
12 years.
Sea stars perhaps have the pulse of the ocean with their seawater vascular system. Thank you, dear. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not quite done here.
No, we aren't.
Because it is time for a very special farewell visit to the Movie Star Minute.
Yes. Yes, it is.
This week in the Movie Star Minute, we are finishing Roy Scheider, I do believe.
Yes. I feel like we should have ended with last week's. Last week's was so good.
Well, it didn't have Roy Scheider in it.
I know, but
this,
like,
one does.
Aztec Rex, man.
I've been saving Sorcerer, 1977's Sorcerer, directed by William Friedkin, for our last Scheider-based visit to the Movie Star Minute. Just recently, like a month or two ago, added to the Criterion Collection.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. Where Roy Scheider plays Jackie Scanlon, a mob driver hiding out in Central America in the absolute ass end of the world, playing a role written originally for Steve McQueen. Scheider, of course, had a falling out with Friedkin after not being cast in The Exorcist. Friedkin said that, yeah, my stars were all my, like, sixth or seventh choice. But the studio insisted that Scheider was the guy because they could work together, even if they weren't terribly friendly. And also, you know, Jaws just happened. So, like, come on, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
So, what's Sorcerer about, dear?
Not a sorcerer.
No one does any sort of dark magics. That is true.
No.
There is no dragons.
There are no dragons. No, there is
necromancy.
No magic.
Were you hoping there would be?
Well, with a name like that. Okay, so here's the image.
The image.
The image for this movie. And it's like, you know.
Like the famous image of the truck driving on the rickety suspension bridge.
The truck
with a man sitting inside a hole in the bridge.
Yes. And like, that is definitely a haunted bridge. That is definitely a bridge that like leads to like a temple of magic. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Perhaps a temple of doom.
Yes. Also that truck, the like wench, the thing.
Winch.
Winch. The winch.
A wench is something that a sorcerer might enjoy.
Well, you know, looks like teeth.
It does.
So what this really looks like is that there should be like a magical sorcerer who enchants this truck and it's going to eat you like teeth. And you're trying to get away down the magical bridge of doom. I'm just saying, like, it seems like it should be a lot more mystical and magical than it is.
So now that you've answered my question by saying what the movie's not about and what you wish it was instead, why don't I answer my question and say what the movie
what
is about?
Well, what it's about is getting explosives through the jungle without blowing yourself up.
Yes. And it is perhaps the most tense film ever made.
It is very tense.
It's incredible.
I had to get over what it wasn't about, though, first. I was so confused at the beginning of this movie, too.
Yeah.
Because of, like, all the, like, the pre-story things that happen to, like, set up characters. And
there
I'm like,
are, yes.
Where's the truck? Where's the sorcerer?
There are four unrelated men who only find one another as volunteers for this suicide mission of driving dynamite that has ceased to be dynamite and instead is just loose bags of nitroglycerin.
Mm-hmm.
That, oh, I love the first scene with the explosives where the one guy, like, gets some of the juice on his fingers and acts like he's already dead.
Yes.
And he just flicks it and it goes off like firecrackers, these tiny little drops. It's so good. But it starts with each of the four of them, what they are doing before they wind up in this place.
Yes.
And it's professional murder, a Palestinian liberation bomber, a dude who sinks his company so bad his business partner shoots himself in the parking lot.
Yes.
And then eventually, where's Roy? Oh, he's in Jersey. Mm-hmm. he's robbing the weekly bingo takings from the Catholic diocese.
But I'm just sitting there like, what the fuck? Where? What? What's going on?
And once they've all had their introductory globetrotting introductions, then we get to the setting. And once we've been in the setting a while, then we get to the truck and the mission.
And there's no sorcerer.
There's the name of the truck is Sorcerer.
But there is no sorcerer.
There is. It's a truck. I saw it. It looks like a Mad Max truck.
It looks like a Mad Max truck. I also thought there was going to be like shit like that more so.
When they build this truck and out of like spare bits of other junk trucks and they turn on the lights, it's like Frankenstein sitting up from the slab. It's so good. But back to Jersey, back to the introduction, this heist that goes wrong with Jackie Scanlon. Roy Scheider's very first scene, he takes holy water.
Yes.
You might think, that's not as wet as I want a Roy to be.
Don't worry, he gets wet.
You wait for his second scene, where he's not looking as the getaway driver, and explodes a fire hydrant. He gets so wet.
And then it rains a lot.
Then it rains a lot. He's filthy. This has got to be the nastiest smelling Roy Scheider.
I think they all had trench foot from this or something.
The actual director got malaria making this movie. Who knows what the characters came down with?
Ringworm?
All the worms. Every shape of worm, they got them.
There's a scene where, like, they're trying to cross another death bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's not only is it, it's pouring, but it's over this, like, river that is flooding.
Mm-hmm.
And they just get, like, covered in that water. And then there's a scene later where, like, they're in swamp water.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, y'all are gonna die from worms and parasite. Get a tetanus shot. My God.
That bit there when Roy falls in like the swamp quicksand.
Yeah.
He's just madly hacking at brush because, yeah, there's this gigantic tree across the way. It's impassable. His plan is to make another road because they're all so desperate for how much money they're going to get paid.
Through the, like, 4-foot deep swamp.
Absolutely manic. And this is, I think, one of the best examples of the director's theory of action as character.
Mm-hmm.
We do not get monologues from these four men about their perspective on life.
No.
Or their past or their place in the world. There's very little conversation at all.
Yeah.
But all four of them are so defined mm-hmm. by action.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you're acting without speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
it's so much of the movie is that, and it's great.
And, like, none of them are more desperate for this to work than old Jackie Scanlon. One of my other favorite Roy scenes, early on before the trucks happen, he's hanging out in the bar, and there's just a point of view of him just, like, mesmerized by this old-fashioned, I guess kind of then-fashioned, ad painting behind the bar. He wants that lady's butt and that ice-cold Coca-Cola so bad.
I do not remember that scene.
Oh, it's good. It's good.
Maybe I was distracted by the butt.
Maybe. Another one of my favorite Roy moments is the very end of the truck journey, I guess, where he's gone so far over the bend that he's hallucinated the jungle as the weirdest, most surreal rock formations of the American desert. The jungle disappears in his mind, and there's
It becomes Mad Max.
Yeah, there's this, like, psychedelic freakout. And then you find that he's just been carrying the crate on foot for the last 2 miles.
Yes.
Absolutely mad from exhaustion and cholera and a dozen other things. Oh, I also love how, like, he and the professional murderer are in the first truck, and they go over the death bridge in like the poster, the famous image. And he is so excited because he knows that the titular sorcerer with the other true never getting over that bridge. That means they're going to deliver the goods, get a double share. He's whooping it up. It's the happiest he is in the whole movie. But then when those guys actually die later.
Yes.
And how much it wrecks him.
Yes.
He's not happy about being the last man standing with a 4-time share. He is so resentful when, like, the mine owner is, like, writing out that check. Mm-hmm. He wants nothing less in the world than the money he nearly killed himself 20 times to get.
Yes. It was more than 20 times. It was definitely, like, 200. I don't know how he's alive.
Do you think... Across the Movie Star Minute, this is the least Nathan Bridger performance we've seen out of Roy.
Yeah.
It's gotta be, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Scanlan is a dead man inside.
Yeah, because you can see, like, there's aspects, even when, like, his characters were very not Roy, there were little aspects that would, like, remind me of, like, my favorite, like, Bridger sass and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get that here.
Scanlan does not have, like, the sassy sarcasm that we see so many times. There are no kids in this movie. There are no kids in this movie to be good with.
No.
So that's gone too.
Yeah.
Frankly, we're lucky he gets wet.
Oh, he gets so wet.
But, like, yeah, he's a guy who is dead inside, and that works for him as a mob driver. He gets the job done. The dude just shot a priest dead in front of him, and all he's worried about is, hey, stop roughhousing in the back seat where we're trying to get somewhere. But then, yeah, the adventure of this explosive run, like, lights something in him only to squash it even deeper. And then, like, the very end, when, like, he's got his check in hand, he becomes part of the village. And you, if you haven't seen this movie, might think, oh, he goes and finds a home. No, this village is hell. This village is presented as the worst place that God has ever put his wicked eye to creating. The locals are an undifferentiated mob of monsters. It's not a not racist movie. I'll say that.
Yeah.
And for him to, like, find a place there means that he's given himself to just being a minor duke of hell. He is absolutely damned. And then he gets shot and you don't even see it in, afterward anyhow.
Yeah.
It's I like this movie a lot, but it's not a feel-good movie.
No.
It's a feel like I want to crawl out of my skin every time a tire moves 8 inches.
You were having such issues watching it.
Yes!
You were you were what I was like during Fury Road.
Yes!
Yeah. I didn't have that reaction.
Well, no, you were waiting for the dragons!
I was like, where's the sorcerer? And the elves.
It's the name of the truck.
I think they should name the truck something else. Such as teeth.
Well, Roy's truck was named Lazaro, after Lazarus.
Why does one of them get the name of the movie? That's not fair to the other truck.
To make you think it's the truck that survives, but then they can do a switcheroo because it's the truck that definitely doesn't survive.
It just seems very unfair to the other truck.
Mm-hmm.
They should both get credit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should be called Sorcerer / Lazaro.
Sorcerer and Lazaro.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. And then you would think, like, okay, there's going to be Italian sword fighting. With sorcerers.
And then you'd be even more confused.
Yep.
You wouldn't come around to the movie until, like, the last 10 minutes.
And then he dies! And I'd be like, what? What happened?
Let's see. We talked about a movie. You talked about some favorite Roy moments.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about what of Bridger is in this character, which is, like...
None.
Even less than I imagined possible. So I guess we're out of the Movie Star Minute.
We are, and we are done with season 2.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The season that you all dreaded.
I sure did. But we made it through. And you know what? I'll say the last five episodes, higher hit rate than, you know, the first 15. It's got the egg. It's got Piccolo in the egg.
Sequest has
Got Piccolo in the jungle.
Sequest Season 2 has some highs and some epic lows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. It's a ride.
And next up is Season 3. And those of you who are following along with us on Peacock might think, what, they don't have Season 3? Here's the thing.
Gotta go look for it under a different name.
Under a different title, because
Sequest 2032.
Because Sequest's third season was retitled Sequest 2032. One of several changes, including the brand new star of the show, Michael Ironside.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we met Michael Ironside wearing our homemade gorgeous sea suits. Thank you, dear.
You're welcome.
Had a conversation with him that you can go back a number of months in the feed to find.
Yep.
But while season two has a wild gulf between it at its best and it at its worst, season three, the 2032 year, I will say, is remarkably consistent.
It is.
It is unified.
Yes.
It is much more serialized than Sequest has ever been.
Yes.
And all of that leads to a measure of consistency that even season one cannot compare to.
I really like season three.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm also going to lose my shit in 7 years.
Yeah? Why is this?
It'll be 2032.
It'll be 2032.
Yes.
So join us as we move on to talking about Michael Ironside's first leading role in a film or television. By 1995-96, he was already a guy who was a household name, but for villain roles and supporting roles, and not the lead guy, not the guy that carries the project on his shoulders. Sequest was the first, and that is still very rare for him.
Yes, it is.
He may be the thing carrying your enjoyment of a film. He's done that many a time.
Yes.
but there is always a bigger star than him, even if that may be, say, Casper Van Dien.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure, okay. So, I'm looking forward to turning the page, starting this brand new chapter, and I would like every last one of you to help us do it. And there are, and there's one big, big way that you can, which is telling a friend.
Yeah, you can do that.
You can do that. You can share the show around. You can share the links around. This is going to be a great jumping on point. You know what a new season means. It means a big tonal shift, like we just mentioned. Cast turnover, fresh start. For one, it looks like more than 3/4 of the cast have to be resurrected from the dead. How are they going to do that? What's that all about?
Yeah, just wait.
Or
just
maybe
wait.
They don't. Maybe there's that don't. Much cast
maybe,
turnover.
Maybe it's no one.
Maybe it's
but
just
Michael Ironside.
And Lucas and Deckwood and Darren.
They have to get back to Earth. What if they don't?
What if they don't?
What
they
if it's literally,
they're the ones that are breathing.
What if season three was literally just like, we don't know what happened to that Sequest, so
we built another
new
one. Sequest 3.
And we just carry on.
Mm-hmm,
what
mm-hmm.
if? So tell a friend. You can also leave us a rating and review whenever you listen to us. That'd be nice. No one's done that in a while, so, like, you should.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you should also follow us on Blue Sky.
Yes.
We are there as WSKRS. And it's fun.
That's Whiskers.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, we're having a great, great time.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about dolphins. Talk about paella. Talking about all sorts of things. But I would also like to point people toward a recent guest spot I did on a show called Mechanista in G from the Scanline Media family of shows, network, you might call it, where they, every week, their regular hosts talk about mechanical design, mostly of big robot cartoons, but you know, you do that for a few years and you start branching out into other things. They had me on for their episode on Aura Battlers, that is the big bug bots from a show called Aura Battler Dunbine and its various spin-offs and sequels and artist design projects that only exist in books. That one went up on back on the 11th. I'll link it in the show notes so you don't have to go digging too far. We had a good time. They do video now, which is helpful for something talking about, you know, visual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I recommend that version because the video they program, the video platform they use has a little doodle tool.
Were you doodling?
I was entertaining myself while talking about the Bugmans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This makes sense.
Also, like, Aura Battlers are really cool looking.
So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant. And in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.
They will always be his words.
They'll always be his words, but, like, things are changing.